Guardian Unlimited.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Can you hear me? You always tell me a week after that you couldn't. But I try my best. Thank you very much for being with us this afternoon at the final installment of our journey through the 32 Beethoven sonatas. We have reached the final stage. It had been a very long trip indeed. Almost 3 years, if I'm correct. I'm very sorry that the journey is finished, but at the same time, it's also a wonderful feeling of discovery, and it's never finished because there will be further journeys. All the previous occasions I started with music, but I decided to start with words now. It's very, very difficult to talk about Beethoven sonatas, but especially difficult to talk about the final three because they are just so great that words fail, at least my words. Indeed, you would have to be somebody like Thomas Mann, who in his wonderful novel Dr. Faustus gave what to me is the most beautiful and the most valid description of the final piano sonata, Opus 111. So poetic, and to me, Thomas Mann's description says much more than all the musicologists put together. Certain musicologists have speculated that Beethoven left the final piano sonata unfinished, that it is a fragment. And Thomas Mann very beautifully explains how wrong that view is, because there is nothing unfinished about the final piano sonata. Beethoven knew very well that this was to be the last sonata. He had been written piano sonatas for over 30 years now. And at the end of his life, he knew that he will still write something for the piano. Indeed, he had written a series of bagatelles and, most importantly, the magnificent Diabelli variations. But as far as piano sonatas are concerned, he had nothing more to say. The three sonatas were written somewhere between 1820 and 1822. And it's obvious from Beethoven's sketches and his sketchbooks that he was working on them simultaneously, not individually. So this is very much a triptych, like Mozart's final three symphonies are, or a little bit later, the last three piano sonatas by Franz Schubert. And there are many, many motives and elements that unite these three masterpieces. Also very important are the biographical details that we know from Beethoven's life and from his letters. His health had been deteriorating rapidly. The hearing is practically gone, which is a great tragedy, but this had been with him for the last 20 years or so. And also the struggling circumstances of his private life when he tried to take custody of his nephew, Karl, and struggling with the Austrian authorities to be able to look after his nephew. And this is all very much part of these final three sonatas. Musically speaking, we are on the threshold of the last string quartets, and also the Missa Solemnis, which is one of the greatest works of Beethoven or by anybody. He was working on the Missa Solemnis at the same time as he was working on the piano sonatas. There are many points in the sonatas. These are purely instrumental pieces, no vocal elements in it and no text written to it. And yet, the religious feeling is, to me, omnipresent. If we look at something like this. Arioso dolente, or klagender Gesang, lamenting song, from the A flat major sonata, opus 110. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with Bach's St. John Passion, where there is the aria for alto with the viola da gamba. The words, es ist vollbracht, it is consummated. This is the moment where Christ dies, and it's a straight quotation from the Bach Passion into the Beethoven Sonata, so it's quite obvious what he was thinking about. After this arioso dolente, we get the first of the fugues. And I don't think I'm speculating too much if I think of the arioso dolente as the Agnus Dei of the Missa, and this one is the Dona Nobis Pacem. You could sing the words Dona nobis pacem, Dona nobis pacem. There are no words, but I think it's good to have certain associations here. Music is not just a sequence of notes. In the E major sonata, opus 109, in the final movements, which is a theme with variations, the fifth variation goes like this. To me, the words credo, credo, credo in unum Deum. Yeah? So, and also in the Missa Solemnis, also there we have the credo, I believe in one God. Not really the music of an atheist. So as a listener, you are welcome to have whatever beliefs or a lack of belief, but I think as a performer or even as a listener of Beethoven, we have to try to get on his wavelength. Now, let's look at the sonatas individually, because although they are a triptych and they belong together, they also have very distinct individual characters and qualities. It's quite important that Beethoven gave separate opus numbers to these works, and he did not unite them as under one opus number as he did before with opus 2, there were three sonatas, opus 10 there were three, and opus 31 there were also three. But here towards the end of his life he felt that the works were just too important. They have to have their separate own opus numbers. Let me play the beginning of opus 109. This is the exposition. I don't measure music by stopwatch, but I don't think there is another Beethoven sonata with such a short exposition. It's incredible how concentrated and how compact it is. It's over in no time. Most of you remember the G major sonata a few months ago, opus 79. And the final movement of that sonata. Very charming, but relatively unimportant movement. But let me just play this as a chorale now. And transpose it down a third. And then add some figurations. And here we have the same music. But how different it is in expression and in character. To me, the miracle of this movement is that it does not begin. It continues. It comes from somewhere. There is no distinct beginning, and it is really very, very poetic indeed. One doesn't feel any downbeats or any bar lines. It just floats. And these seven bars constitute the first subject. That's it. Beethoven writes, vivace ma non troppo, lively but not too much. And the liveliness is expressed by these complementary semiquaver movements. Sort of hand in hand, complementing each other. And Also, it's very unusual that this movement only has two themes. Most classical sonata movements have at least three distinct themes: the main theme, the secondary theme, and the closing theme. And here, Beethoven only uses two themes, and both have different characters, different tempi, and a completely different meter even. The first theme, as I said, vivace ma non troppo, and the second one is adagio, espressivo. However, if you have spent long years with this sonata, and I spent about 3.5 decades, and I'm still nowhere near solving the mysteries of it. It's a very ambiguous, very mysterious movement that also many listeners, I think you will agree with me, it's very difficult to grasp the first movement of Opus 109. Basically because of the dualism of these two themes. It's good to find a pulse as an interpreter that unites them. So if the first theme had this tempo, then the slow one, or one, you feel that there is a relationship between these two tempi. One is lively, the other one is slow, but they share the same heartbeat. And this is how we have a sense of unity. The development section only uses the principal theme, never touches the second subject. Recapitulation, as you well recognize it. However, it is in forte now, and it's a confirmation. There is none of the hesitation of the beginning of the movement, and also the two hands are very far apart. We will see this often in the last three sonatas. Don't forget that this keyboard that you are seeing here is much wider than Beethoven's keyboard was. It's about 3 octaves wider. And when Beethoven writes something like this, and he is using the top and the bottom of the keyboard with which he wants to show the earth and the heavens. And somewhere the human being is in between those. So, the second time the second subject comes, and you remember in the exposition here, Beethoven wrote a variation of the second subject. Also in the recapitulation, but listen to the harmonies here, how modern, how daring they are. It's a C major dominant seventh chord, and the C major chord, nothing could be simpler than that. But it sounds like an incredibly wild dissonant chord in this context. It's also the only time Beethoven writes fortissimo. Of this music sounds improvisatory, sounds like an improvisation, but don't believe what you hear, because it's very, very carefully thought out, and his instructions are incredibly detailed in this sonata. Now let me just play the end of the movement, the coda. Like the motto of the whole movement. He leaves the semi-quaver motion and presents the theme like a beautiful solemn chorale. And back to the first theme. Constant change of minor, major, and the major winds.